Today we're diving into the Prince of Darkness himself, Ozzy Osbourne, and exposing the occult connections behind his music, image, and influence. We'll explore how Black Sabbath was inspired by shadow entities and a 16th century magic book, the hidden satanic symbolism in his songs, his ties to Aleister Crowley and Anton LaVey, a soul transfer theory with Youngblood, and even an infamous bat and dove incidents. Was Ozzy just a rock god or a pawn of the occult elite? Let's get into it. Now, this is the kind of show that's right up my alley, folks. If you don't know who I am, my name is Isaac Weishaupt. I've been hosting this podcast since 2014. I've written 9 books on this subject. My expertise is in the realm of the occult and pop culture and where those two worlds collide, and it doesn't get any better than the man himself, Ozzy Osbourne. Now, this is a serious show for me, right? I'm a huge Ozzy Osbourne fan. I'm not like the biggest Ozzy Osbourne fan on the planet, so, you know, I've never been to a concert, and I don't listen to every single album, but he definitely holds a place in my heart, so it's sad to see him go. And this episode, because of the timing of things, I got all my ad spots filled for the month, which means normally on my supporter feeds, you get 1 bonus show a month. Well, this is your lucky day because you're getting 2. In fact, you're actually getting 3, I think, because I did a 3-part James Shelby Downard that wrapped the last 2 episodes in this month. So you're getting a 3rd one this month. So let's get into it. Let's start the show with a reading from the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame bio for Black Sabbath. So you know where we're headed with this show, because I got a lot of reading to do to you. Everything changed when Butler, that's Geezer Butler from Black Sabbath, everything changed when Geezer Butler came to the band with an idea for a song inspired by a disturbing apparition. A fan of horror films and the black magic themed novels of Dennis Wheatley, he flirted briefly with the black arts. But when he saw what he believed to be a figure from the dark side at the foot of his bed one night, he ceased his dabblings in the goth world. Now, this article doesn't mention that this was around the time that Ozzy Osbourne stole a 16th century occult magic book, which we're going to talk about later, okay? With lyrics by Osbourne, the group composed a song about the visitation, entitling it Black Sabbath, after the 1963 Boris Karloff film. It provoked a reaction in audiences unlike anything else in their repertoire, and they knew they'd stumbled onto something powerful and unique. Forced to change their name because there was already another band named Earth, they made an obvious choice, Black Sabbath. That's when it all started to happen, Tony Iommi told writer Mick Wall. The name sounded mysterious and gave people something to think about, and it gave us a direction to follow. Black Sabbath was the polar opposite of the Beatles. All right, so we're talking about opposing polarities. We're goating with the bobbin already, okay? Even though they all like the Beatles, which we'll talk about later too. Whereas the Fab Four sang, yeah, 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 Osbourne pleaded, no, no, please, no, in Black Sabbath. It's a satanic world, Butler told Rolling Stone in 1971. The devil is more in control now. People can't come together. There's no equality. It's a sin to put yourself above other people, and yet that's what people do. With Butler serving as principal lyricist and Iommi as the musical architect, Black Sabbath pursued such themes as war, social chaos, the supernatural, the afterlife, and the timeless conflict between good and evil. The group was a product of the late 60s. It was a time when youthful idealism had begun to ebb amid the war in Vietnam, the influx of hard drugs, clashes with authority figures, and the bruising realities of working class life. Low wages, grim labor that lay ahead for many of them. And then, all right, okay, anyway. Then it goes on to sort of talk about the conflicts they have. And we're going to talk about this conflict and this idea of, was Ozzy and Black Sabbath worshiping the devil or not? And we're going to come to a conclusion, and I will tell you if they're illuminate, confirm. Do they worship the devil? It's complicated. It's complicated. So who was Ozzy Osbourne? Of course he's dead, right? He just died. I don't know who doesn't know that by now. Died July 22nd, the night I'm doing overtime here, folks. This is late at night. I don't know if you noticed, but the studio is dark. I'm supposed to be in bed, humping on my pillow right now. Who was Ozzy Osbourne? Super goated. He invented heavy metal. He was called the Prince of Darkness. And I grew up listening to Ozzy. I recall very distinctly, my dad had a variety of mixtapes, and Black Sabbath was on those mixtapes. Because my dad was cool, you know? He was a cool dude. He would listen to Black Sabbath. I remember we would listen to Iron Man and War Pigs. And I like that. Those were the tracks. Because he listened to a bunch of stuff, and like those were some of the ones I was like, oh, I kind of like this, you know? Ozzy was born December 3rd, 1948. And he died at the age of 76, which is remarkable for how bad a shape he was in for so long. Interestingly enough, he was born in Leamington Spa, England, which is the hometown for Leon Vitali from the Kubrick films, right? We've talked about Kubrick many times. Leon Vitali played Red Cloak in Eyes Wide Shut. Very occulted movie, as you know from my six-part series on the movie. Also, a man named Aleister Crowley came from Leamington Spa. Because in Leamington Spa, there's a little location where you can find the masks from Eyes Wide Shut, the Venetian masks. You can find them at a period of time, find them as sort of public art pieces. Now, Ozzy, he was born normal parents, right? This was no Nepo baby. Mom worked in a factory. Dad was making tools for GE. He was dyslexic, had ADD. Tragically, he was sexually abused. Oh, I forgot to give trigger warnings. We're gonna use explicit language on this episode because I found a good reason to do it. There's lots of swear words in this, so this one's gonna have swear words, and we're gonna have trigger warnings for sexual abuse talk. So you've been forewarned. Okay. He was sexually abused by bullies as young as age 11, and he attempted suicide multiple times. I didn't know this until today when I was frantically trying to put the show together. From EW.com, he said, two boys used to wait for me to come home after school. They would fuck around with me. They didn't fuck me, but they messed around with me, he said. They would force me to drop my pants and all that shit. They felt me and touched me, and it was terrible. The first time it happened was in front of my sister, and that affected me even more. It became a regular thing on the way home from school. It seemed to go on forever. The abuse compounded the trauma of growing up poor in a family of eight, where his parents were always fighting about money. I was afraid to tell my father or mother, and it completely fucked me up. Dirty little secrets fester, and that is one of the first things I said to my kids. When I was a kid, people did not talk about these things like they do now. They didn't have chat shows talking about child molestation. I worked it out with a therapist, but if you have a traumatic experience when you are young, it does fuck you up. Sharon knows all about it, and it was only with her that I could finally relax and be myself. So it all makes sense, his struggles with addiction and drugs and alcohol over the years. Sad story, right? Even as a teenager at 17, he robbed a clothing store, does 6 weeks in prison. Then he gets out and he gets into the Beatles, all right? And he said it was like someone turned the world on to him. He said that he heard the song She Loves You and realized, he said, quote, I knew I was going to be a rock star the rest of my life. You hear this a lot. You hear this a lot from the celebrities and these musicians that they get a premonition or they channel something from the ether about knowing their future and their fate. A lot of times they talk about predicting their own death. You hear that often, right? Like, remember Big and Tupac? They had albums talking about how they're going to die, like Machiavelli and Life After Death with Big. So he gets into the Beatles. A couple years later, Geezer Butler recruits Ozzy to be the vocalist for Black Sabbath, which the band was called Earth. Before that, it was called some kind of polka. Had some weird-ass name. And then he later meets Sharon and so on. I'm going to walk you through this whole thing, the music career. So it starts out with Black Sabbath, right? We're in the 60s here, which is insane because the 60s starts out with songs talking about holding hands. And by the end of the 60s, we've got Charles Manson and Black Sabbath. And Ozzy cited the Beatles with planting the seed for him to become a rock star, as I just told you. But the Beatles also connects into the world of Charles Manson with the Helter Skelter theory, the White Album, all kinds of stuff. But the whole vibe of Black Sabbath was dark occult music, and their debut album, self-titled Black Sabbath, dropped on Friday the 13th, all right? And I was reading one description. They described it as some kind of mix of Dennis Wheatley's occult novels and H.P. Lovecraft. Which all kind of makes sense because they were into Led Zeppelin, too. They liked the Beatles. They liked Led Zeppelin. And Led Zeppelin was very much into the occult as well. So Ozzy was the vocalist for Black Sabbath until 1979, and they fired him for a variety of, I guess he was, you know, drinking too much. They replaced him with Ronnie James Dio. And Black Sabbath would go on to rotate everybody out over the years. I mean, they've been making tons of albums just with a whole different band members. And Ozzy even rejoins in the very late 90s. In the 2000s, does a bunch of concerts with Black Sabbath, including the one that just happened on July 5th, 2025, called Back to the Beginning, which is an apropos title when we get to my conclusion when we talk about this idea of a soul transfer theory about him transferring his soul into Youngblood, this new young singer. Back to the Beginning. It's very Ouroboros, very an infinite loop, right? So anyways, this July 5th concert broke records for fundraising for Children's Hospital because the headliner was the original Black Sabbath group performing for the first time in 20-some years. It's, you know, the whole band with Ozzy singing. And what's really weird about this final appearance is the premonition of death. A lot of people claimed that this was the funeral for Ozzy Osbourne. And then the singer, Youngblood, was at this final concert, and it was 17 days before Ozzy died, right? And there was this big to-do about Ozzy passing the torch to Youngblood, who performed Ozzy's song Changes. And Ozzy's been mentoring him, calling him family over these years, and we're going to come back to this in the exciting conclusion. But Black Sabbath go on to become the greatest metal band of all time. First album cited as the greatest metal album of all time. Everybody loves Black Sabbath, okay? They fire him from the band. He goes on solo, and he still crushes it, right? Still crushes it. And then he would go on and invent reality TV. And you could argue that MTV's Real World was kind of the first reality TV, but the Osbourne, what's it called? The Osbournes? I don't even know the name of the show. I watched the whole thing. The Osbournes was from 2002, and it dropped, and it became it broke records for MTV for the most viewed series ever, first off. But this was a different era in reality television. Okay, this wasn't a documentary style. This was sort of a prefabricated dramatization to sort of spice things up and dumb it down a little bit, and it influenced what's been going ever since with reality TV shows. Now, when we talk about Ozzy, there's so much occult stuff to unpack, and I'm going to do my best to hit all of it right now. Because Ozzy and Black Sabbath, they were one of the main targets for satanic panic during the 70s and 80s, and to be fair, they kind of deserved it, okay? So let's go through all the reasons why they could be Illuminate confirmed. And then in conclusion, we're going to talk about some of this immortality stuff and bring it all together and be like, okay, is this band Illuminate confirmed? So let's go back to the debut Black Sabbath album. All right. Geezer Butler had a dark experience, and it's in the liner notes to their live album from 1998 called Reunion. And this is in reference to what I read earlier. He says, "I'd been raised a Catholic, so I totally believed in the devil. There was a weekly magazine called Man, Myth, and Magic that I started reading, which was all about Satan and stuff. That and books by Aleister Crowley and Dennis Wheatley, especially The Devil Rides Out, which is a great book. Great movie, too. You got to buy it on Blu-ray. They don't stream it anywhere. I moved into this flat I'd painted black with inverted crosses everywhere. Ozzy gave me this 16th century book about magic that he had stolen from somewhere. I put it in the airing cupboard because I wasn't sure about it. Later that night, I woke up and saw this black shadow at the end of the bed. It was a horrible presence that frightened the life out of me. I ran to the airing cupboard to throw the book out, but the book had disappeared. After that, I gave up all that stuff. It scared me shitless. Now, apparently, from what I could gather, nobody knows what this specific book was. It's alleged that Ozzy threw it into a canal because it had too much spooky energy. My theory to suggest is that maybe this is the book from the 16th century is the only clue we have, and the only book I can think of is Cornelius Agrippa's Three Books of Occult Philosophy. Now, this book was interesting because back in 2018, there was a very strange finding. I'm going to tell you all about it from thebat.com. In the rare books and manuscripts collection in the Cushing Library lies Marcus Vipsanius's Agrippa's De Occulta Philosophia Libri Tres. In fear of condemnation from the church, Agrippa hesitated before allowing his writings to be published in 1533. Opening the book reveals occult symbols and descriptions for their use, but it also exposes the stories of those who have held it before. Pages corrupted by stains and fading ink sketch the tendencies of readers. During its circulation, the book also gained a note and signature that appears to be written in blood. Baca, who is a PhD student, said she's particularly interested in the notes found in the book's margin, such as a bloody message and signature. According to Baca, the translation of this message states, quote, "When you have done all that is contained here, I will be at your command, Beelzebub." Since preserving the book means the page can't be tested, it's unclear whether the passage is truly written in blood. However, Baca said the signature Beelzebub, often used as a synonym for the devil, indicates serious occult possibilities. Other surviving copies of this book do not contain such unique and unsettling marks. But not all interactions with books are damaging. Another unique aspect of Agrippa's book is the cover that was changed by an unknown person with unknown intentions. Cataloger and Italian resource librarian Felicia said this cover contains sacred music. This ironic way of refurbishing a book containing the devil's signature seems almost sacrilegious, but adds to the book's mystery. It looks like whoever covered the book got a couple of pages from a chant book and used it as the cover. Whether they were trying to make fun of the chant or whether they thought it just looked pretty, I don't know. So, I think it's possible, not this specific book with the blood signature in it, but it's possible that the 16th century book that basically started Black Sabbath was Cornelius Agrippa's book. Now, the self-titled album Black Sabbath has a track called Wasp, which if you remember in the 80s, there was a band called Wasp that says, "We are Satan's people." There's also a track called Nib, N-I-B, and the whole track is written from the point of view of Lucifer, who falls in love with women, because, you know, these entities, these demons, man, there's one thing on earth they love more than anything, and it's the female loving, okay? And one of the conspiracies about Nib is that it means nativity in black. Ozzy's claimed that it's a reference to one of the guys' goatee that they called a pen nib. Then there's another track called Behind the Wall of Sleep. It's a reference to an H.P. Lovecraft story of the same name. There's a song called Wizard. It's about Lord of the Rings. I mean, these are all very occult references that they were into, which is no secret. They've said it out loud many times. Now, the inner liner to the debut album has a giant inverted cross with a poem. And if you read through Ozzy's autobiography, I Am Ozzy, it says this: "Then, when you opened the gatefold sleeve, there was just black everywhere and an inverted cross with a creepy poem written inside of it. We had had no input with the artwork, so the inverted cross, a symbol of Satanism, we later found out, had nothing to do with us. But the stories that you hear about us being unhappy with it are total bullshit. As far as I can remember, we were immediately blown away by the cover. We just stood there, staring at it and going, fucking hell, man, this is fucking unbelievable." That might be the worst impersonation. Fucking hell, man. I can't even do Ozzy. Anyway, point is, there's a big giant inverted cross, and this attracted tons of Satanists to Black Sabbath. Unbeknownst to them, they also were like, hell yeah, that's cool. So, in fact, Anton LaVey from the Church of Satan threw an album launch party for Black Sabbath. They didn't attend, but let's go back to Ozzy's book. He says, I can honestly say that we never took the black magic stuff seriously for 1 second. We just liked how theatrical it was. Even my old man eventually played along with it. He made me this awesome metal cross during one of his tea breaks at the factory. When I turned up to rehearsals with it, all the other guys wanted one, so I got Dad to make 3 more. I couldn't believe it when I learned that people actually practice the occult. These freaks with white makeup and black robes would come up to us after our gigs and invite us to black masses at Highgate Cemetery in London. I'd say to them, look, mate, the only evil spirits I'm interested in are called whiskey, vodka, and gin. At one point, we were invited by a group of Satanists to play at Stonehenge. We told them to fuck off, so they said they'd put a curse on us. What a load of bullocks that was. Side note, wait till you find out about what happens with one of Ozzy's guitarists. Back to the story here. Britain even had a chief witch in those days called Alex Sanders. Never met him. Never wanted to. Mind you, we did buy a Ouija board once and have a little seance. We scared the shit out of each other. That night, at God knows what hour, Bill phoned me up and shouted, Ozzy, I think my house is haunted. Sell tickets then, I told him, and put the phone down. The good thing about all the satanic stuff was that it gave us endless free publicity. People couldn't get enough of it. During its first day of release, Black Sabbath sold 5,000 copies, and by the end of the year, it was on its way to selling 1 million worldwide. None of us could believe it. Alexander was one of those original Wicca dudes. Said he was initiated into witchcraft at age 7 by his grandmother. Fun fact, his grandmother was dead before he was even born, so who knows? Then Black Sabbath makes their second album, Paranoid, and one of the main tracks off that is War Pigs, which was actually supposed to be Walpurgis, or Valpurgis, which is a satanic holiday. Or witchcraft holiday, I guess. Originally, it was a Christian holiday, and then it was like kind of a witchcraft, and then Church of Satan took it. And Anton LaVey founded the Church of Satan in 1966, before all the Black Sabbath albums, of course, on Valpurgis night. Because there's only 3 holidays in the Church of Satan. You've got the birthday, you've got Samhain, which is, you know, Halloween, and then you got Valpurgis night, which is, you know, May 1st. May Day. It's a spring equinox holiday where they do bale fires, believed to be a more ancient reference to Baal, like the Baal fires, Baal being Moloch, which you would sacrifice children to, right? That's the theory about all that. I think even Hitler killed himself on May Day, right? Or April 30th, I think, technically. Geezer Butler said this, quote, I wanted to write a song called Valpurgis, you know, the satanic version of Christmas. Write it about that Satan isn't a spiritual thing, it's warmongers. That's who the real Satanists are. All these people who are running the banks and the world are trying to get the working class to fight the wars for them. We sent it off to the record company and they said, no, we're not going to call it that, too satanic. So I changed it to War Pigs. So what do you know? Ozzy and Black Sabbath were just a bunch of liberal hippies. Turns out. In Ozzy's bio, he says this about it. He said, it was originally going to be called Valpurgis, which was a term for a black magic wedding or something. So like Ozzy's not too hip on any of this, right? Then we changed it to War Pigs, and Geezer came up with these heavy-duty lyrics about death and destruction. No wonder we never got any chicks at our gigs. Geezer just wasn't interested in your average I love you pop song. Geezer also liked to put a lot of topical stuff like Vietnam references into her songs. Also in I Am Ozzy, in his autobiography book, he says this. Before we left England, we had already recorded our follow-up to Black Sabbath. we had it in the can only 5 months after the release of the first record, which is unbelievable when you consider the lazy arsed way albums are made these days. It was originally going to be called War Piggers, which was a term for a black magic wedding or something. Then we changed it to War Pigs. Then they also had a track called Iron Man, about a man who time travels to see the apocalypse. Geezer wrote all these lyrics, right? He was in some wild stuff. And he comes back to warn people about this apocalypse, and he's turned into iron, and the people mock him. It was kind of a play on Christ. Geezer even sort of admits that. But this album, this Paranoid album, gets even more of the satanic panic stuff rolling, right? And it comes to a head when a woman commits suicide listening to it. I'm going to read you from Wikipedia. In 1974, nurse Hilary Pollard from Rawcliffe, North Yorkshire, was found dead between a pair of speakers with the Paranoid album on her turntable. She had overdosed on sleeping tablets with a small enough dosage to make suicide inconclusive. However, the album's possible influence in her potential suicide was still mentioned in the inquest, but ultimately it was decided that Black Sabbath were not to blame for her death. A lot of the words in the songs, a lot of the moods of the songs, are aggressive, especially in the early days, satanic if you like. That was the way it felt. So that was the way we played, but it got out of hand. With Paranoid in England, for instance, there was a girl found dead, a nurse she was, dead in her room with our album going on the turntable going round, and it was taken to the court saying it was because of this album that she was depressed and killed herself. Then in 1982, in an interview with The New Music, Geezer Butler claims, "If the moral majority don't understand it, they'll try to put it down or get other people to read all sort of things into it. The moral majority sort of people picked up on the satanic part of it. I mean, most of it was about stopping wars on that side of it and some science fiction stuff. There wasn't that much satanic stuff. And what there was, it wasn't exactly for the devil or anything like that. It was just around that time, and we just brought it to people's attention." So, Black Sabbath goes on to make a few more albums. Like I said, they end up firing Ozzy. He goes solo, right? And his first album, Blizzard of Oz, he's already off to a crazy, insane start because he's still drinking like crazy, apparently. And this is where we get the iconic story about him biting off the head of a bat, all right? There's this Journal of Religion and Pop Culture article titled Devil Music and the Great Beast, Ozzy Osbourne, Aleister Crowley, and the Christian Rite. I'm going to read you from it. One of his most famous episodes occurred when he was supposed to make a grand entrance at a CBS meeting of executives to negotiate the release of his first album in America. He planned to enter with a flourish, letting loose doves from his robes that would fly about the room. After releasing one dove, however, he was overcome in his drunkenness by the compulsion to bite the head off the other, tossing its lifeless body before the shocked executives. Although he was immediately escorted from the premises, the startling display convinced the executives of the marketability of this madman of rock. Though Ozzy has always claimed the dove incident was unplanned, he easily incorporated such behavior into his stage act. In his increasing efforts to outdo both himself and the growing number of heavy metal bands that sprung up in the 80s, Ozzy staged more and more outrageous shows involving monstrous costumes, gothic stage sets, and you can see all that on his album cover artwork. You can see that all through the 80s. Really badass. And even the launching of butchered meats into the audience as Ozzy appeared to explode before their eyes. Ozzy appreciated so-called fan participation as the audience began to bring its own meat to throw back, which culminated in Ozzy's most infamous moment as someone threw a live bat on stage. Apparently, the animal lay stunned and motionless while Ozzy picked it up, thinking it was rubber, decapitated it with his teeth. The media frenzy caused by the incident continues to haunt Ozzy to this day. In a recent interview, Ozzy ruefully imagined his eventual obituary, saying, "I guarantee that if I was to die tonight, tomorrow it would be Ozzy Osbourne, the man who bit the head off a bat, died in his hotel. I know that's coming." So, And the guy who threw the bat up on the stage, by the way, claimed it was dead, but it was actually still alive. And it even bit Ozzy, and Ozzy had to get treated for rabies and all that stuff. I feel bad for the bat. This poor thing, like, bats are cute, you know? Let the bat do its thing. What are you doing? Leave him alone. So anyway, so his debut solo album, Blizzard of Oz, drops in 1980, right after Black Sabbath kicks him out. And it go like blows up on some fuck you hater shit, right? It's like he didn't need, turns out he don't need Black Sabbath. And he had guitarist Randy Rhoads on his first two solo albums, right? Well, Randy Rhoads would end up dying at age 25 in a plane crash. And what happened was the band was driving to Florida to do a show. The bus breaks down. The driver is all coked up. He's like, hey, I can fly planes too. And he's like, he's going to start doing multiple trips to fly them the rest of the way. And Randy Rhoads and a makeup artist get on the plane. And he starts buzzing, trying to buzz the tour bus to wake up. Who are they trying to wake up? Thought I had it in my notes. They're trying to wake up somebody that was sleeping on the bus. And they got too close and they hit the bus. And the plane crashes. And, you know, instantly killing Randy, flew through the windshield. I think he got decapitated even. And the makeup artist and the pilot. So, strange things did happen, right? Ozzy said that those Satanists put a curse on him. Because Ozzy was supposed to get on that plane. He was supposed to get on it, but he wanted to get some more sleep, so he didn't get on. Then in 1984, a California teenager, John McCollum, commits suicide listening to Osborne's track off of Blizzard of Oz called Suicide Solution, which is actually a song about misusing alcohol. So again, Ozzy's in the news for supposed suicides. The parents sue him because the lyrics say something like, where to hide? Suicide is the only way out. Don't you know what it's really about? And he gets sued, right? And he ends up getting sued again. We'll go into that. But it wasn't all just sadness and tragedies with the Blizzard of Oz. No, no, no. There was some fun to be had also. Like his recollection of the album release. I'm going to read you from I Am Ozzy. Listen to this. It says, one night in Germany, we went to a big dinner with the head of CBS Europe. We were releasing Blizzard of Oz over there. He was a big bearded cigar chomping bloke and very straight. I was out of my fucking clock, of course. So we're all sitting there at this huge table, and halfway through the meal, I get the idea to climb on the table and start doing a striptease. Everyone thinks it's funny for a while, but I end up stark bullock naked, take a piss in the CBS guy's carafe of wine, kneel down in front of him, and kiss him on the lips. They didn't think that was very funny. We didn't get a record played in Germany for years afterwards. I remember being on the plane flying out of Berlin with Sharon ripping up the contract saying, well, that's another country gone. It was worth it for the striptease, wasn't it? I asked. That wasn't a striptease you were doing, Ozzy. It was a fucking Nazi goose step up and down the table. That poor German bloke looked mortified. Then you put your balls in his fucking wine. I thought I pissed in his wine. That was before you pissed in his wine. And he got in trouble with pissing a lot. He pissed at the Alamo and got arrested for it too. Got banned from San Antonio. But yeah, that album, the second album had Crazy Train, Suicide Solution, Goodbye to Romance, which was a track about leaving Black Sabbath, and Mr. Crowley, or Mr. Crowley, as Ozzy incorrectly pronounced it. Because my whole thing is, like, I don't think Ozzy wrote a ton of these lyrics. I don't think he was really into this occult stuff. I think he was just a good singer, right? Of course, the track Mr. Crowley is about Mr. Aleister Crowley, right? The most famous occultist of all time, who said Satan was his, he was Satan's right-hand man. He said that, you know, and he said that his holy guardian angel Awaz was Lucifer. So, I mean, a lot of people try to defend Crowley and be like, oh, no, he wasn't in Satan. It's like, no, he literally said that he was. And the track, Mr. Crowley, was in fact inspired by Aleister Crowley's book, The Diary of a Drug Fiend, that Osborne had read, and a deck of tarot cards found in the studio as the recording of the album was commencing. So I'm not sure what to believe. I've read also that a lot of the early solo albums were written by Randy Rhoads also. So I'm not sure if maybe Randy was a fan of Crowley or Ozzy was or both or what. Because Ozzy was blitzed out of his mind for a long time. So then he kept dropping solo albums. He had 1981's Diary of a Madman. This was Randy Rhoads' last album. This one had Over the Mountain, Flying High Again. Over the Mountain, a song about astral projection, by the way. Talks about magic and traveling through the astral plane. Very occulted. 1983's Bark at the Moon also influenced another murder. On New Year's Eve, 1983, Canadian teenager James Jollymore killed a woman and her two sons in Halifax, Nova Scotia after listening to the Bark of the Moon song. A friend of the murderer quoted, "Jimmy said that every time he listened to the song, he felt strange inside. He said when he heard it on New Year's Eve, he went out and stabbed someone." Then Ozzy does a bunch of other solo albums. No Rest for the Wicked has a track about the Manson murderers called Bloodbath in Paradise. So, in conclusion, what's the verdict here, right? Do we illuminate confirm Ozzy posthumously? Do we do that? You know, I'm biased, first off. Let's get that out there. I'm very biased. But I know when I see there's a lot of connections to the occult and Satanism, like, we got to call it what it is. And he's got a lot of occult connections here. Probably not as many as Geezer Butler, but he's very close, right? And some people believe that maybe he or Geezer or all of them made a pact with Satan for fame. The classic Robert Johnson tale of selling your soul at the crossroads. And in fact, Black Sabbath had a track called Selling My Soul written by Ozzy Osbourne. And it goes like this. "Man of madness who lives in my head, keeping me awake at night, he sits on my bed. He drives me crazy. He won't go away, playing his game every night and every day. My mind feels heavy. My body feels weak. Suicidal thoughts crying out for sleep. Impending doom is what I'm about. Think I'm going mad without a shadow of doubt. I sense a serenity, yeah? Is it really out there? I don't read the holy books because they take me nowhere. I can't hold on. I'm losing control. I'm paying the price now for selling my soul." Now, part of this claim could be that Randy Rhoads was part of this sort of blood sacrifice ritual, or maybe all these suicides and even murders inspired by this dark music are part of that. Another claim is that the stuff with biting off the head of the dove is symbolic of destroying Christ, decapitating Christ, you know, symbolizes the Holy Spirit as the dove. Another crazy idea, he's done a lot of drugs, including LSD. And this was in the 60s and 70s, which, you know what was happening right around then. You had the CIA doing MKUltra mind control experimentation, particularly for the music scene. It's possible there's some MKUltra stuff in there. He doesn't seem to remember a whole lot, does he? Maybe. I'm just going to throw that out there. Now, that Journal of Religion and Pop Culture talks about the Christian right and their attempts to make U.S. policy shifts by assigning this blame, this satanic panic, by saying that everything is satanic in pop culture, right? Everything is just a modern day witch hunt. And in the article, they give us the definitive stance of Geezer Butler from Black Sabbath. It says, "While some critics were condemning Black Sabbath as black magic for the sick masses, people like us because they want to listen to our music, not because of any black magic gimmicks. We only do two numbers about black magic, in fact, and they are both warnings against it." And the Wikipedia also claims, it links to a paywalled New York Times article that I couldn't verify, claims that Ozzy would say prayers to God, Christ, before taking stage every night because he was a Christian. Which goes into this idea of the crosses. You see these metal bands, they're using satanic imagery, even talking about Satan and inverted crosses, yet you'll see them wearing a cross. I would argue that maybe what they're doing is they know they're sort of pulling down certain dark energies and they're using the cross to protect themselves from those energies. Now, that doesn't mean that we give them a pass necessarily. I mean, you're pulling down these satanic energies and making it look appealing, but then you're protecting just yourself with the cross, which is kind of dangerous too. But you're also like, it also implies that you're a Christian. You believe in Christ and you believe in the power of Christ to protect you from these evil spirits. So it's kind of a double-edged sword. And if you read through I Am Ozzy, the autobiography book, he says this, quote, "The funny thing is, I'm actually quite interested in the Bible. I've tried to read it several times, but I've only ever got as far as the bit about Moses being 720 years old. And I'm like, what were these people smoking back then? The bottom line is, I don't believe in a bloke called God in a white suit who sits on a fluffy cloud any more than I believe in a bloke called the devil with a three-pronged fork and a couple of horns. But I believe that there's day, there's night, there's good, there's bad, there's black, there's white. If there is a God, it's nature. If there's a devil, it's nature. I feel the same way when people ask me if songs like Hand of Doom and War Pigs are anti-war. I think war is just part of human nature, and I'm fascinated by human nature, especially the dark side. I always have been. It doesn't make me a devil worshiper no more than being interested in Hitler makes me a Nazi. I mean, if I'm a Nazi, how come I married a woman who's half Jewish?" So that implies that he's not very Christian, right? He says right there, if there's a God, it's just nature. And it's very sort of a cult, very goat with the bobs, to talk about this duality idea. That's something you find in a lot of Gnostic thoughts of, this spectrum of, well, I mean, I'm reading through it again. "I believe there's day, there's night, there's good, there's bad, there's black, there's white." So maybe that's actually more of the Christian worldview, I should say. Let me retract that. But he does say, if there's a God, it's nature. If there's a devil, it's nature. Now that I'm rereading that, I'm like, wait a minute. So it does seem to maybe fit more in line with that clear sort of black and white separation of the two things. Because in the occult, they believe that everything's connected as one. There is no such thing. It's a social construct. There is no good. There is no evil. It's all just is, right? And in the book, he actually critiques Satanists and occultists. He says, "I have a theory, you know, about people who dedicate their lives to that kind of bullshit. They're just in it because of all the sexual debauchery they can get up to." In the book, he also talks about how a guy jumped on stage with some satanic cloak and garb, and his security immediately bashed this guy in, and Ozzy's like, "Hey, you can't do that to him." And then they point, and he looks over, and inside the guy's cloak was this giant dagger. And then he tells a story about these Satanists following his tour around, and they would have these little candles for rituals and seances set up, and he got so tired of seeing them, he would blow out their candles and joke like happy birthday, right? Joke's on him, that's one of the satanic holidays. So final thought here. The young blood soul transfer immortality theory. This one's out there. It's out there, but let's talk about it. There's this singer, Youngblood, who, it's confusing to me. I'm a 45-year-old man. When I see this guy and I hear his music, it sounds like pop nonsense to me. But apparently he's a rock star. He uses rock imagery. Like, if you just watch his videos without the music, he looks kind of like a rock star. It's not my cup of tea, but it was Ozzy's for some reason. Ozzy loved this guy. Ozzy mentored Youngblood for many years. And the claim is that somehow Ozzy is transferring his soul into this young man for him to continue on. How does that work? No clue. But Ozzy's last concert, that July 5th Black Sabbath concert, they called it his funeral. And Youngblood took the stage, and the big viral moment was that he sang one of Ozzy's tracks called Changes, which is a song about going through, you guessed it, changes. Or life evolving, right? And strangely enough, Ozzy was in a Youngblood video that was also called The Funeral, or just Funeral, I should say. And in it, he puts Youngblood in a casket, and takes his own cross off and gives it to Youngblood. And strangely enough, at Ozzy's funeral, this concert, Youngblood does the inverse of that. He gives Ozzy a cross, which was also a big to-do in the news. I find all that very strange. But yeah, Ozzy was really into this Youngblood guy. Ozzy and Sharon both said that Youngblood looks like a young Ozzy. And he uses the same similar dark imagery, kind of like emo stuff. But Youngblood's got a lot of the classic Illuminati symbolism, the, you know, covering up one eye, the all-seeing eye stuff, the 666 hand, all that stuff. And in an interview with Vice that I read, we find out that his grandfather was a Romani gypsy, which is just like Robert Plant. Robert Plant's family was Romani gypsies from Led Zeppelin. And Ozzy, very fond of Led Zeppelin. Now, what's really weird to me is that July 10th, you know, right after this final concert, right before Ozzy dies, there's an article on vinylmeplease.com about a Youngblood documentary that's dropping, just so happens to be dropping next month, August 2025. Isn't that strange? It's almost like this guy is getting, they're opening up the doors for this guy to be blowing up and take over for Ozzy. Don't you dare, Youngblood. Don't you think you're ever going to replace Ozzy? What are you thinking? Then in August 2024, there was an article titled, Youngblood's new album will see his soul captured on record. What is that? Is that Youngblood putting his soul on record like the Amish people? You know, you can't take the photos of the Amish. They think their souls will get captured. Is he putting his soul on the film so that Ozzy could use him as a vessel? Oh, it's so crazy. Now, what's even stranger than all of this is that just last month in June of 2025, it was announced that Ozzy is now the Prince of Immortality. That's right. It's a weird collaboration that he's doing with Liquid Death Brand, where they're selling this limited run of iced tea cans that has traces of Ozzy Osbourne's actual DNA. Dubbed Infinite Ozzy, there's going to be 10 cans of Liquid Death iced tea that were all drank by Ozzy Osbourne before being sealed to preserve his DNA. And it comes in this sort of lab quality display container, and it's signed by Ozzy. And they were priced at $450. I'm sure they went way up, right, since then. But, I mean, that's very odd. It's very specific. It's very odd. It's almost like everyone was planning for Ozzy to die. Like, everybody knew this. You know what I mean? And then they also are laying the foundation for Youngblood to sort of pick up. And the media is also showing us that as well. And also, for fun, just one more fun little funsy. Livia on the Patreon told me that there's a YouTuber named Trisha Paytas. I never heard of her. I guess she's a big to-do. She gave birth to her baby Aquaman. That's right. She named it Aquaman. Same day Ozzy Osbourne died. Now, who cares, right? She also told me that Jason Momoa, who plays Aquaman, was the one that hosted Ozzy Osbourne's last show, that final funeral concert. What does it all mean? Are we talking about soul transfer stuff? It's kind of strange. It's kind of out there, but it's definitely worth looking at. So it seems that even in death, there are occult conspiracies about our man Ozzy Osbourne living on. So even if you think Ozzy was worshiping Satan, which I don't know if I do. It doesn't. If you ask me to put a verdict on it, I don't think he was. It seems like they were messing around in those territories. But I mean, you could throw that claim against me because you'd be like, well, he's talking about it all the time. He's reading all the books, you know? It's just, it's interesting stuff. And maybe that's where they had it too, right? It's like Mark Frost from Twin Peaks. He says, I'm just a tourist here. I'm not a practitioner. So I don't think he did, from everything I can tell. It's possible he had some influences, some maybe even some possession of some kind, right? Because when you mess with that stuff, that kind of stuff could happen. But we also have to consider his character. He was horrifically sexually abused as a child. And that's, you know, this is why this child sexual abuse stuff is such an evil thing. It ruins these people's lives sometimes. It could take them right down the wrong path. It could separate them from God, which is why we need those Epstein client lists released, right? We got to hold those rotten clients accountable for their actions. But final verdict, man, I don't believe it. I don't think Ozzy's Illuminate confirmed, but like I told you, I'm very biased. Even if he was, doesn't mean you can't enjoy his music, okay? All right, thank you for your support. Thanks for supporting the show. You guys keep the show alive. It's very fun for me, and I enjoy doing it, and you guys make it all the better. You support me, and you give me the time it takes to do this stuff. I mean, look at me. I'm staying up till 11 at night doing this because it's interesting stuff, all right? And you guys support it, and you keep the show alive. So I say that, I mean that. Thank you so much for your support. Till next time, stay positive.